Hello, hello.
Here we go. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Take a Lesson, National Conversation on Our Community. My name is Annalisa Adams-Clautier, founder and president of Altruistic Leadership, where our vision and mission and purpose is to provide you with outstanding educational resources for the diverse leader. With me here today is my speaker and moderator for today's conversation, Monica Brooks. Monica is a community leader and advocate for literacy, racial diversity, and autism awareness in the San Francisco Bay Area. She's also the founder of Great Books for Our Kids, a community organization that promotes literacy and education through interactive community building. She's the perfect person to kind of guide us through these really flashpoints that's happened in the last month in terms of our nation. She's also the executive director of Mocha Autism Network in the Bay Area, where she spreads awareness and advocacy in terms of autism for communities of color. Monica, welcome, and thank you so much for bringing us some knowledge, really, for today's national conversation.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate being here. It's been a while, so it's kind of cool.
It has been
kind of dope to be here.
It has been a while. And, you know, you come with a fountain of information, which, by the way, this broadcast is actually at the request of our LinkedIn group. So welcome to the over 12,000 members of the African American Leadership Program on the LinkedIn group who kind of teed up what are we doing and what are the resources, altruistic leadership, that you can give us in terms of moving this conversation forward, healing our communities, talking to our churches, what's going on our campuses, and today we're going to talk about our community. So let me set the table. Monica's going to go through really some key historical events and flashpoints that is setting what I keep calling the national conversation, because regardless of where you're at, there's a conversation taking place. If you're on social media, it's happening there. If it's in your community, it's happening there. And I think that's all very positive, and also in your churches. She's going to talk about the Black Lives Matter movement to let people understand really kind of the genesis and what's going on there, a little bit about Jesse Williams, because that actually opened doors and awareness in terms of his speech during the BET Awards, these flashpoints, of course, the hashtags that are out there, and our African-American men who have been unfortunately killed. We're going to talk about corporate America in a very light way. Actually, we have a whole segment that's going to come up about that. But really, this whole thing about Mark Zuckerberg, that hit our social media, racial trauma, national response. What is the NAACP doing? What's happening locally? So we invite you, by the way, if you're online with us, push 1. You go into the chat room. You and I will have a chat, and we'll bring you on. And then also resources. We thought it would be great to curate, if you will, some resources where you can go and take a look at some of the resources that are online, and we'll also make some available to you. Again, as a reminder, if you have any questions, you can press 1, and I'll see the prompt, take you into the screening room, and you can come on air and ask your question, or I can ask it in your behalf. So let me turn this over to Monica. Monica, I know it's early for us here on the West Coast, but let me turn it over to you to start our conversation.
Okay, thank you so much, and good morning, everyone. I wanted to talk about a brief history of how we got here as far as, you know, the concept of Black Lives Matter as a movement. In 2013, the hashtag Black Lives Matter, meaning that this was a movement brought out of social media, which is also a good thing, in the tradition of Arab Spring, it came out as a way to monitor protests around the country. In response to the acquittal of George Zimmerman and the killing of Trayvon Martin. What happened was a group of women who were organizers met at a conference from 3 different parts of the country, and they said, well, let's do something to help other organizers find each other. Let's find a way, just like Arab Spring, to get everyone together so that they can protest, have the same principles, and have peaceful movements come out of this. One of them is a San Francisco State alum, proud alum. So what happened in 2013, and then it kicked off a little bit more. It kind of, that was in first year. So it's still kind of finding its way. around 2014 in Ferguson, it kicked off a little more because the Black Lives Matter movement had a little bit of fundraising going on, and they were able to travel. They were able to go to Ferguson, Missouri, and help other organizers become better organizers. They created ways of strategy, teaching the young people how to send their demands peacefully, how to teach people how to, unfortunately, handle things like tear gas and batons and the best way to collapse while being arrested and things like that. So they came off of the internet, as people, you know, want people to do, and they became action. They did things for action. They started bringing in city and state legislators to help create at least proposals to become laws in places like Louisiana and Florida. And that's kind of the second gear of what was going on. Third gear kind of kicked in 2015. There's an event, I'm not sure if anyone knows, of liberal politicians or liberal activists, a conference prior to the conventions called NetRoots. When there is no convention for elections, they still meet and they still talk about organizing. And it happened in July 2015 when Bernie Sanders went to NetRoots to talk about his candidacy for president, and people for the Black Lives Matter movement were in the audience and said, "We will not let you speak until our needs are heard." And it became a giant thing because it was the first time a political candidate in the 2016 election cycle was told, "Black Lives Matter, and we're going to have you put us in the table and at the table when you speak about this country." And it kicked off again a little bit more in September 2015 when young women from the Black Lives Matter movement in Seattle stopped the Bernie Sanders rally, took over the microphone, and explained, "This is a great rally. We would like to hear about what you are going to do about the systematic things that are happening by authorities sought to protect us to Black youth." As of right now, there are chapters everywhere, including in the country, including Oakland, Minneapolis, New York, Austin, Dallas, and across the pond in London, Paris, Nigeria, Ghana, also Australia. The thing about Australia is Black Lives Matter applies to the Aborigines because that's what they are called there. So what is happening is there is a systematic oppression. I'm going to say oppression, but Annalise is a better person than me. And what's happening is the information is getting out, and the young people are using social media. The young people are using it to activate and organize themselves. It is a way of taking the information and history learned from the protests of the civil rights movement and moving it to our children in the new age of electronics and technology, and it's a great thing, in my opinion. I teach social justice at a high school, and I teach them that social justice means getting the word out, which is social media, and getting the message out, which is social media, being out in Congress, being out in city council, and taking action in protest. So as long as everything is responsible and everybody has the same goal, it seems like they are taking the message of Black Lives Matter and creating a space for themselves. 45% of people of color get all their news from social media. So this is a way that we are now, this is our new black radio. It used to be that black radio got our message out. The 1998 Telecommunications Act kind of abolished a lot of the black-owned radio stations because of deregulation and the availability of people to take over more than one station in one city. So social media is where activists can get their message out at 140 characters of power at a time. What's happening?
And so, go ahead, Monica.
what I was just going to say, so what's happening now is as when the Democratic National Conference came in 2015 to kick off the election campaign, there was a Black Lives Movement resolution made in the Democratic National Convention. Black Lives Matter is at the table, at least in the Democratic Party, about what are we going to do about the fact that it seems like there is a preconceived bias that allows a person in power to believe that fatal results are supposed to happen when it comes to people of color, because it's not just African Americans, it's also Native Americans, it's also Latino Americans, it's also people with different abilities. There are people who are, you know, on the autism spectrum, manic depressive, who because of lack of training, it seems, the results are shoot first, ask questions later. And these are the things that are, you know, now at the table. You cannot have legislation without us, say the people of the Black Lives Matter movement.
Got it. And so, Monica, that kind of leads us to this next point where, like, Jesse Williams and the speech that he made at the ET Awards, which really kind of encapsulated some things, and I don't want to really kind of rehash that. People can go in, but it was a catalyst, right? It was an awakening. It was awareness. Can you talk a little bit more about that, you know, just in essence of how it brought awareness to folks who actually didn't know? And, you know, as much as there was some negative, there was tons of positive in terms of making that awareness a little bit more known. And I know when we're in the Bay Area, you know, Black Lives Matter and the things that you've talked about in terms of its movement and its awareness campaigns, how that has hit kind of Facebook. And then we'll start to turn to more of, you know, the racial trauma, so on and so forth, because there's a question on that.
Okay, so the thing about the Jesse Williams thing is that was kind of the plateau, because celebrities have been involved in the Black Lives Movement almost from the beginning, from everyone from Beyonce and Jay-Z to Prince, and Jesse Williams has been involved in Black Lives Matter efforts since New York and Eric Garner, and also since Ferguson. He was the thing about Jesse Williams is he is using his platform, he's utilizing the platform to speak what the people who can't get into these venues are speaking. A lot of people have put in money to pay for bail. A lot of people have donated. A lot of concerts have been held by Prince in different cities. And that money went to Black Lives Matter efforts, which was found out after his death. In Baltimore, about $100,000 was donated to a bail fund by Jay-Z and Beyonce. In New York, for the Eric Garner incidents, Beyonce and Jay-Z have lent their voices. These and a lot of people say things about entertainers as if they aren't citizens. And what's happening is, with all this media attention, people become aware, and they ask people questions, and what about this? And they want to read more. So, you know, a lot of people want Beyonce to be the same 15-year-old girl that they knew years ago, and she is becoming somebody who wants to help. So she, like the rest of us, educates herself. And then that's what gives her the activism, just like any other activist movement. It comes with research, and it comes with talking with people. So the Jesse Williams speech at the BET Awards was the culmination of all these people putting in work, and him having this platform, and him having a sense of himself and his authentic blackness to say, we are not here, you know, he's doing what he is taught to do, which is standing up to power and telling the power, we are not going anywhere. And if you think if you think we were tough then, we're still going. I am, you know, we are taking We are taking the moves of our ancestors, and we are continuing this fight. And this fight will continue until there's no fight to be had. If you want us to stop, you need to change your tactics, because it, you know, a lot of it is not us. So I think that the popularity of people who did, and it also gave, it helped people who thought that the Black Lives Matter movement people, as they call them, were troublemakers. And it helped people kind of solidify, it helps people solidify the kind of, you know, for people who needed validation, a concept of, hey, this is serious business. We are not playing with you anymore. And so this kind of thing happens. One of the things that does help out is the backing. We're backed by a lot of people. You know, Black Lives Matter statements have been brought out by the NBA, the WNBA, the NAACP, when Cornell Brooks took it over from Ben Jealous. Also, you know, the historically Black fraternities and sororities have all put in efforts to help either support or become the people who go into the room and say, we are here representing these items that have been brought up by the Black Lives Matter movement. You know, there's still generational challenges, you know, as in every movement. Every movement thinks the last movement is too radical. Everybody thinks it's too radical. And that happens, and there's nothing we can do about it. But, you know, everybody knows that this has to stop. And because of that, you know, and then we have to fight the concept of pooling this specific concept of authority figures killing our people for, you know, for seemingly no reason, and lumping that in the concept of black-on-black crime, which there is no equivalency, but it's used as a way to detract us from the fact that people who are called to protect and serve are doing neither. And black-on-black crime, the numbers for black-on-black crime are just like the numbers for white-on-white crime, because killing is based on vicinity. And when you live by people like you, that's where the numbers come from. And these are the arguments and the conversations that need to be had when we're discussing things, so that we can be sure of the message and make sure that we understand that this specific fight of Black Lives Matter is specifically for the socialization, institutionalized concept of allowing people of underserved places learn to know that you are not supposed to die in the street, and that if things happen, justice should be had. Less than 0.1% of officers who have killed people of color have been indicted and charged and convicted. That number does not stand, really. You know, we have to understand that it is 2016, it is July, and there have been over 500 shootings by the police of all cultures. And the Black Lives Matter movement is here, and they're not going anywhere, and their goal is to let you know that we will be fighting against this particular topic, and it is our job to make sure that, you know, we make sure that not only are we okay about this, that we understand that there's a purpose for it. And if there are any questions, you know, ask. So one thing that I do want to point out is that there are other companies that talk about Black Lives Matter. Sometimes it takes a while because they want to, you know, everything's about money, as as you well know. So we want to, you know, we have people like, you know, Mark Zuckerberg, who talks Black Lives Matter. And he had to have a conversation with his company and his employees because somebody crossed out Black Lives Matter and put in All Lives Matter. And he had to say, this is a specific thing. This is for Black Lives to Matter. No one's saying that all lives don't matter, but the visual and the narrative is, with the institutionalized racism, with the current jailing processes, with the 94 crime bill, that the narrative is that Black lives matter less. And he had to have a conversation with his staff because some things happened. And they were, you know, it seemed like, you know, it seemed like he was, you know, he has to have this conversation because literal people who work there were having problems with this concept of Black Lives Matter, and he did not want that in the workplace culture of Facebook.
Yeah. And really, you know, and I think he did a fantastic job, and if you want to Google, you know, that conversation, and he also was very transparent and putting the email out there and then also opening up again and having that, you know, global conversation, and you put it very well. He just wanted to kind of raise and put a spotlight on this segment right now. There's a concentration and there's a movement behind it, and here's how it shows up in our organization. Monica, we've got some folks who are listening to us on the website, and we talked about this whole idea of racial trauma, and they've gone in and they've shared the resources that they have out there. And, you know, it really is a form of PTSD. So some of the questions, or some of the question actually is coping with kind of the racial trauma. And we're seeing it in terms of creating space for us to have this open dialogue about communities of color, to be able to be proactive. What are some of the other things that our listeners can do in terms of kind of coping for themselves? I know we're going to have next week, we're going to talk very specifically about our children that are of college age and high school age. But what else, as you've done some research in this area of racial trauma, what are some of the things they can do? Because I do like that idea. It's very, you know, in the mental health community, people may experience symptoms of PTSD. But what are some of the other things they can do besides creating space for race, if you will, to have that conversation?
Well, sometimes you just need to be around people who understand. It's okay to not want to discuss it with everyone. It's really okay, because sometimes they're not ready. You're ready to talk about it, but they're totally not ready. And it's because a lot of the people who are of privileged class don't have to think about this. We bring in the burden of worry and trauma into our workspace or into our college space or wherever we are. So it's good to, like, just have a space for you and your friends or who you think you're safe with to just say it's a bad day. It's better to do that than to just go to work. Because there have been times where people go to work and it's just a lot. Mental health days are okay. You know, going to brunch is okay just to decompress from all that's happening. Over the last couple of weeks, there have been times where I just told my boss, you know, I got a lot of work. I'm put on my headphones. You know, if you need me, just email me. Don't need to talk to me. It's all right. You know, and as long as you're doing that, you're good. Another thing is to write. You can also write it out. Get a journal. Talk about write to yourself your thoughts. You know, everything you do with any other trauma to release yourself, you do with this, but it's specifically to, I feel this way about my personal safety, about the safety of my family, and the safety of my community. I have a group of girlfriends that I hang out with, and we talk about things that we can do. We're parents. We're parents of teenagers who go outside by themselves. I have a son on the autism spectrum. I grill him daily. What are you doing? Where are you going? You know, make sure you have your ID. You know, it's the things that, and those things relax you, because at least you know you're trying your best and you're doing what you can. And then there are people who want to be activists or want to help in this movement, but they don't want to march. They don't want to be cognizant of what's going on your campus. In your community. Check out what's going on. What are the police actions and what are the safety things that are going on in your police department? If something happens, what is their operational guidelines when something happens, if there's a shooting, is there a is there a civilian, you know, review board? These are things that you can do that make you feel better because you are helping solve this problem, which is, you know, the unneeded deaths of people. You know, there is a group now, now that's working because of this, the last thing that happened with Mr. Kinsley in Miami, because he was the aide of a person on the autism spectrum. So now people are saying, now people in the autism community who really didn't hear anything before, especially when we were talking about, you know, this happened, you know, we worry about this for our sons with delayed response all the time. Now they're saying, wait a minute, you know, we need some action on how you respond to people with special needs. And this isn't just, you know, invisible challenges, but, you know, anything. So great things to do depending on your action level. Now, you don't have to go and do things and fight crime. You don't have to do that. But you can help people who do by supporting them, learning about them, saying good things about them, because it's always about the narrative. If you're going to be on Facebook complaining about somebody's protesting in the middle of your freeway, you know, let's change the narrative a little bit, saying this small inconvenience is fine because at least I'm coming home alive. That's helpful, too, because it helps people put things in perspective. As a person who mentors young people who are always down to be in the street, it's kind of hard to help put that balance in to a bunch of young people who are scared. And we as people who are also scared because we're scared for them, and it's a hard burden because, you know, we're scared too, but we have to look a little stronger for our young people. But we need to let them know that this fight is worth it if you do it effectively. We need to feel good that our integrity is intact and we are helping people not feel the way Eric Gardner's wife feels, you know, Tamir Rice's mother feels, Sandra Bland's family and sorority sisters feel. It's one of those things where we're in this together, because despite your rank at work, it can happen to you. Despite, you know, how much school you went to, it can happen to you. Despite where your pants fall, it can happen to you. So we need to make sure that, but it's one of the things.
I wanted to say that I thought was really important, Monica, I'm going to elbow you now, because you said something very important in terms of kind of like that weight. And I was reading the article, and we'll make this available with blackdoctors.org, where they say that racial trauma often goes unnoticed, right? The person who talked about the PTSD. And that these are hidden wounds on our adults and our young youth of color, and it's worn like invisible weights. And I thought, I was like, wow, that's a good way to kind of, you know, really capture what's happening. And because it's invisible and because we don't see it, and to your point, it's okay, you know, not to, if you will, you know, engage at work in a very deep way. You know, they've got some steps in which to deal with that, and that whole acknowledge, affirm and acknowledge. So that's why I was saying this is a perfect point to say you're affirming and acknowledging that this is happening. And, oh, by the way, if it's really weighing very heavily on you, I'm a big fan of go get some professional help, individuals who can help you develop a sense of understanding of what's happening in terms of those racial issues, creating that space for race conversation, having those racial storytelling venues. We actually saw that happen in East Palo Alto in this last week, and it was incredibly effective and helped people understand and create that knowledge and a way in which to rechannel, if you have rage, rechannel the rage. To your point, it might not be activists, but maybe it's writing, or maybe it's doing what we're doing, which is spreading more education and laying foundation for people. That's all I wanted to say. It was a perfect point for me to kind of jump in because you were making some really good points there.
And also, there are healing spaces by Black Lives Matter chapters. They do that also. There are a lot of, in Oakland, they have worked with the mayor to create Black Lives Matter places, safe spaces around the city. A lot of cities that are having the protests, they're working with you know, the city government and their city council people, because local, all politics is, you know, everything is political and all politics are local. So there are, you know,
yeah.
if we do what we're, you know, so if we do what we can do by electing the correct people or the people that understand that we should be at this table, those people are now have the platform to create these spaces for you in their districts.
I'm gonna push uh-huh. this along, Monica, because we're running out of time. National response. I know that you were. I just want you to make our listeners aware of, like, what is the NAACP doing, and then kind of share a little bit what's happening here locally. And then, you know, if there's any other questions out there, please let us know, because we are about to end our broadcast here. But what about the NAACP?
So the NAACP and Cornell Brooks, who is the functioning CEO, their response is kind of twofold. They're holding town hall meetings in most cities, and they also have this campaign where they provide information on what to do if you're stopped by police. And that, you know, the response to that is, you know, it's split 50-50 in theory, because one of the concepts is, you know, we've had these booklets before. These booklets came out in the 50s, so it's kind of sad that we still have to do that. But it's a campaign they have to let people know this is what you do if you're stopped by police. Now, it came out about 18 months ago, and what happens is, and this was before, you know, the singing, you know, the things that have happened in the last few weeks. We're waiting for a new response to that. A lot of NAACPs are working on this. A lot of items from other national organizations, the National Action Network, which is led by Al Sharpton. It's actually not led by Al Sharpton. It was founded by Al Sharpton. It's led by a 35-year-old woman and a 22-year-old woman, and they are the main activists through that. Through that item, a lot of things that can be done in your neighborhood is check your city council, check your district,
okay.
and ask them what they are doing ask them what they are doing for this thing called the stress. There are a couple books that you can get. There's Dr. DuGroy called Post-Traumatic Slave Disorder, which came out a couple years
mm-hmm.
ago. That's a good book. And then also there are the Black Lives Matter Movement website has places that have resources where you can get these things. Also, you know, a good place to get at least a relief or at least somebody talking to you is actually Twitter, because there are people in live time talking about their stress, and you have a community of people who come to you and say, "You okay, sis? You all right? You know, get home safe." And it seems weird because you don't know these people, but it makes you feel a little better that you don't feel alone in your stress. And there are people who feel just like you. I'm sorry, go ahead.
You know, when you talk about resources and books, I think another great book that I read a couple of years ago is called Black Pain. And
oh,
that is. Yes, that is a wonderful book. And I was just looking it up. So if you heard kind of like keyboards in the background, I was like, yes, let me look that up. Yeah, that is a fantastic book. That's something else that I would suggest. So, like I said, we're about to wrap up. You know, Monica, what can they do? We definitely will talk a little bit about, you know, this whole series. You were fantastic in bringing us resource and historical context and how this is moving forward in a, you know, in a very informative way. So what else can people do? I think you covered a lot, but any last words there?
One thing that I would do besides finding a space for yourself to just be you, I do brunch.
Yeah.
You know, that's really important, because anything else you do, as far as activism, as far as taking care of your family, it depends on your own self-care. So you need to make sure that that is one of your priorities. Another thing I would do is just ask people if they're all right. because you don't, you know, as hard as it is for you, there's somebody else in your office, in your church, in your, you know, in your supermarket, in your dentist's office, who may just hear, are you okay? I got a call from, I was getting help from some telemarketer, or not telemarketer, from somebody at a call center, and she was just so flustered. And I was like, you okay, sis? And she goes, it's just been a long day. And I was like, I know. And I get it, and that sometimes that's all people need to hear is that somebody, because sometimes you are in the place and you are the only person that looks like you, and you feel like you're the only person that's having this problem. And sometimes it's okay to be in an elevator and see somebody who just lets out a big sigh and say, you all right? If you need anything, you know, we can get some tea, you know, and then you can help them with their self-care, because people of color bring in a lot of baggage wherever they go, and they don't mean to, but we bring in a lot of stuff because a lot of things are going on with us. And we have to make sure each other is all right.
That's absolutely right. And the thing I would also add, you know, depending upon your walk and your faith walk, I know for me, I am definitely a Christ follower. Please remember prayer. You know, be in prayer for people, be in prayer for the people around you, and be okay in asking someone who, you know, might just need that prayer. Are you okay? You know, may I pray for you? Especially if they seem distressed. You know, respect people's boundaries, but that's certainly something for me that is, you know, top of mind as I think about what's happening in our nation right now. Hey, listen, first of all, thank you so much to our moderator today, Monica Brooks. You can see that she's just a wealth of knowledge. She'll be with us again next week where we do a Take a Lesson, a national conversation on our colleges, right, and our students that are there. She'll be moderating that and coming back to us again. And then we're going to continue the series and talk about corporate America, and I'll be joined by Blake McMorris for that. And then finally, our churches, because all of this, in a lot of ways, again, if you're a person of faith, it really kind of culminates in our churches, which is why we put the series in this way. And I'll be joined by Senior Pastor Ed Harris of the AME Zion Church. I would like, again, to thank our AALP, African American Leadership Program, LinkedIn group, 13,000 strong, for kind of being the forcing mechanism for us to have this national conversation. Thank you so much for joining us on that. My name is Annalisa Adams-Quatier of Altruistic Leadership. Please check out the website, www.altruisticleadership.com, where you're going to find resources and also our Take a Lesson broadcast of our previous series, where we brought diverse leaders that share their leadership journey. And it's very interesting because a lot of what they had to say actually feeds into this national conversation that we're having today. As a reminder, this broadcast is going to be available immediately on our homepage on Blog Talk Radio. All you have to do is put www.blogtalkradio.com/altruisticleadership, and you're there. Please share the broadcast with your friends and your family. Again, my name is Annalisa Adams-Quatier, and on behalf of Monica Brooks and myself, we would like to thank you for tuning in to Take a Lesson. Bye-bye.